You've been listening to Health Talk on KFAR Radio, brought to you by White Spruce Medical in the Steese Medical Center. Life. Now, from the all-new White Spruce Medical, here's your host, Dr. Scott Looper.
Good afternoon, Fairbanks. Welcome to Health Talk. My name's Dr. Scott Looper, and I'm your host today as we talk about health, how to get it, and how to keep it. With me today is Haley Fields. Haley is the clinic director for White Spruce Medical. It's where I practice. And today we're talking about memory. Haley, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Cool. So what I'm gonna, the reason why we're talking about memory is because next Tuesday, which is just a couple of days following the airing of this, I'm going to be doing a talk up at the university. It's part of their summer series of better living. I'm using the wrong name on this thing. It's something like that. Anyways, it's going to be up at the university. It's a series of talks on health. And I got the next Tuesday slot. That's the 20th of June. And since I'm all primed up for talking about memory.
It's fresh in your memory.
Yeah. I thought it might be a good thing for us to go over. So how I wanted the conversation to go this morning is I'll start the conversation going. But I want you to ask the questions that come to mind for you in terms of, you know, memory. In fact, let me just do like a quick overview of the talk. It's real simple. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about what memory is. Then I'm going to talk about how it works, right? Then I'm going to talk about how it breaks. Okay, so how it breaks, how it works, how it breaks, and how to fix it. That's it.
Sounds
and,
great.
You know, sometimes you can fix stuff and sometimes you can't. But a lot of times you can, more than you realize. More than you realize. You know, the thing about memory is that people know that memory tends to get worse as you get older, but they think it's because you're getting older is the cause, and it's not. It's because something broke over time. Now, the over time is where the older part comes in, but the over time isn't the thing. It's the something broke is the thing. So it turns out there's a lot you can do to improve your memory. So let's start off by me just saying, like, what memory is and how does it work. So it turns out memory is not one thing. It's a series of things that all have to take place in the right order in order for memory to work. And thing number one is you have to notice stuff. You're literally your eyes, your nose, your taste, your touch, your perception in a zillion different ways is all sent to your brain for processing. Now, the vast majority of this information does not go into memory. It turns out that our memory does not work like a tape recorder. We don't remember everything. What we do is we forget the vast majority of information that comes to us immediately. It's simply purged. It's too much information and it just never goes into storage. Now, some of the information, you know, like, you know, 0.1% or something like that is actually through goes into short-term memory. So we do have this thing called short-term memory. And we can remember things like, you know, telephone numbers or addresses or, you know, that list of three things on your way to the grocery store.
But you always forget the four.
Yeah, that's right. And that's an interesting thing about short-term memory. You can go, okay, I got it. You know, I need peaches, milk, butter, and, you know, eggs, whatever. But then when you get there, 14 things have happened, and so the short-term memory is purged. Because really what short-term memory runs on is attention. That's what drives it. It's not information. You know, the word is you can remember seven things in short-term memory. You know, if you got a pretty good memory. If you have a poor one, you can remember like five. If I give you five things to remember, then, you know, in 30 seconds I say, what was those five things? You could usually come up with them. I give you nine things, forget it. Unless you're a genius, right? But it turns out they've done a lot of research between people who can remember nine things in short-term memory and people who can only remember three. And it turns out the thing that really makes the difference, maybe you want to make a guess. What do you think makes a difference?
I would think the most important thing on their list
is attention.
Attention.
It's attention. Some people are really good at paying attention. And those people have a bigger working memory, a bigger short-term memory. It's attention. That's what it is. That's what drives it. It's not information. It's not to be able to hold information in. I'll give an example. So if I gave you a list of seven random letters, you know, it'd be, you know, pretty hard to remember. Mm-hmm. But if I gave you the letters in little groups and I said things that you would know, like CIA or NBC or CBS or FBI, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can remember seven of those. You take those three letters because they all mean something. CIA, that's a spy organization, right? FBI, that's the federal cops, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. So it's not the specific symbols. It's how they're grouped. So if I give you seven of those, you know,
acronyms,
mm-hmm. right? Then it would, you know, you could remember it, but not necessarily, you know, 3 × 7 = 21 different letters, right?
Sure,
so it's different, right? So really what it boils down to is not information, mm-hmm. it's attention and how you can organize it in your brain. That's working memory. So people who are good at paying attention can remember more stuff. They did research on these people. They gave them a series of letters and numbers to remember, and then they whispered their name in their ear. They had headphones on, and nearly everybody goes, "Whoa, that's my name," right? And then they ask them, "Well, what were you trying to remember?" And almost nobody can remember what they were remembering. It goes right out your ear, right, or wherever it goes out. Except for the people who are really good at paying attention and could focus really well, couldn't hear the name.
Oh.
They never noticed that anybody was calling their name. They didn't notice it, and they could remember nine things. So it turns out memory has a lot to do with attention.
Hmm.
Yeah, duh. Mm-hmm. It's common sense would dictate that. But it turns out the research backs it up. Okay?
Very cool.
All right, so we were talking about what memory is. Let me finish that little bit of the conversation. So that's short-term memory. In order for long-term memory to be made, you somehow or other, that short-term information needs to be recognized as vital, and then it gets put over into long-term memory.
You need to draw a memory to it or an emotion to it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, some context, some reason that this is a super important thing to know. Now, sometimes it's easy because there's a danger involved, or there's something that's at stake, or there's something that's just really important for you to be able to remember, and that goes into long-term memory, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing you can do is you can practice, and that helps put it in. Another thing you can do is you can combine it to something that you already know and care about, and that helps it more than anything. If you can get a context, then that makes the biggest difference. So let me tell you a little story. When I used to be a waiter, I managed to get through medical school by waiting tables. It was great because I'd go to school in the morning, I'd see patients in the afternoon, and then I'd go to work and I'd wait tables until 11 o'clock at night and then do the same thing over again. It was a pretty busy lifestyle, but what are you going to do? What you have to do? You have to get, you know, make ends meet. But the one thing I noticed is that I couldn't use all my brain power up in the morning at school and in the afternoon in the clinic. I had to save some amount of my brain for working because it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hard job. I had to, you know, manage a big section, and, you know, there's just a lot of things to remember. And one of the things that made it hard is it was a restaurant that was super fancy, and so they had like 9 specials every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, a third of the menu was changing all the time. And so I would get to work, and everybody would be writing down the specials for that day on a little pad. And I would never write anything down. I thought, why did everybody write things down? You don't need to write anything down. You just look at the list and you just remember it. And everybody thought I had a photographic memory. And I didn't.
Mm.
What I did was I knew the trick, because I was in medical school, right?
Uh-huh.
I knew the trick of grouping and finding the pattern. And it turns out it wasn't that hard. It turns out there was 3 kinds of chicken, right? There was the Mediterranean chicken and how it was made, and then there was the mesquite chicken and how it was made, and then there was the tequila barbecue chicken and how it was made. Who can't remember? There's 3 kinds of chicken. That's easy enough to remember. And there was 4 salads. Each salad had its name and how it was made. And then there was 3 desserts. And so, you know, there it is. 10 items there, 9 items, 8 items, whatever. There was this thing, and you could just remember it in these groups. And then you just break the groups down into their individuals, and you break the individuals down in how they're made. As long as you had the story in your head, it was pretty easy to remember all this stuff. So I would get to the table, and I'd say, well, here's our specials tonight. We have 3 kinds of chicken and 4 kinds of salad, 3 kinds of desserts. Here's what they are, da-da-da-da-da. And it was easy enough to do. So there it is. The memory, if you can group it, it works a lot better. If you just try to remember things all in a line, forget it. Who can remember 9 different things with all the information? It doesn't stick in your mind, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so now let's talk about the breakdown. Now, this thing where you go from short-term memory into long-term memory, it hinges on a piece of brain. Now, your brain is not the same thing all the way through. There's different parts that do different stuff, and there's this little C-shaped piece of the brain close to the stem called the hippocampus. There's 2 of them, one on each side. That hippocampus is instrumental at converting short-term memory into long-term memory. Now, this is where you ask a question.
Okay, so how does it solidify in the hippocampus?
Yeah, how do we give right? And how do we know this?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
How do we know this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not a nice story how we know this. Here's the dealio. Back in the 50s, there was this guy who was having really bad seizures, HM. And so they figured out that if they could take out his hippocampus, the seizures would stop, and so the brain surgeons took out his hippocampus on both sides, and they did stop. It worked beautifully, except for then on, he couldn't make any long-term memories. So the researcher had to introduce himself every time for the rest of his life, right? These guys are working together because he would never remember who this guy was. Interesting story.
Absolutely medieval.
And, you know, the funny thing is he couldn't learn anything new, but he did learn stuff new. As long as they practiced with his hands. For example, I'm trying to think of something he was doing with his hands. Like let's say he could do watch repair, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he never knew how to fix a watch, but he could learn in his short-term memory how to do watch repair. And by the next day, he would forget watch repair, except for he put the screwdriver in his hand, and he repair the watch. He wouldn't know how. You ask him, do you know how to repair a watch? No, I don't know how. Here's a screwdriver. Here's a watch. Can you fix this one? I don't know how, but if I did, there it is. It's all fixed. So he could learn by rote. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there's another story of where another lady who had the same kind of problem, she had a brain injury and lost her ability to take short-term memory and a long-term memory, and the doctor had to introduce himself every time that they got together to do the research, and then one time he hit a pin in his hand, and so he shook her hand and poked her with the pin, and she was like, ow, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the next day, he reached his hand out to shake her hand, and she didn't know who he was, right? Because she couldn't have any long-term memory, but she wouldn't shake his hand. So there was some part of her that learned not to shake the hand of this guy.
That was the hippocampus?
Yeah, it wasn't the hippocampus because her hippocampus wasn't working.
Oh.
So if your hippocampus doesn't work, there's a workaround.
Oh.
There's a workaround. Now, you can't retrieve the memory. So the hippocampus is super important, not necessarily for the implantation of the memory, because some memories are getting past this system. Right, the lady wouldn't shake his hand. And he said, why won't you shake my hand? She says, sometimes people hide pins in their hand. But she couldn't remember having been poked by a pin. But she knew on some level. She couldn't recall it. She could feel it.
Mm.
She could sense it. She knew it in her bones, so to speak, right, in her body, in her brain. But she didn't actually know it to the point where she could recall. So the hippocampus is not only important for laying down that memory, but more importantly, it's important for bringing that memory back up again.
Mm.
So if your hippocampus goes bad, then your memory goes bad. You cannot remember long term. You just won't get through the system. It bogs up, bogs down. So how often does this happen, right?
And what breaks it down?
What breaks it down? That's an excellent question, because we know that. We know what breaks it down. The number one cause for hippocampal dysfunction is chronic stress.
Mm.
And boy, oh boy, do we ever have a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
As a society, our chronic stress levels are super high. There's lots and lots of stuff to worry about, and it's worry that ends up doing this. Now, worry is a weak word. It's fear is what it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
Fear changes our hippocampus. It causes the hippocampus to trim itself down. The hippocampus is full of cells. I mean, so it's a part of your brain. So it's got all these neurons in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the neurons do this like switching. They take information and they send it to different parts of the brain. And the amount of switching that can take place declines with stress. And this is thought to be an adaptation for survival, because it turns out you don't remember as many things, but the things that you do remember, you remember better. So when your life is on the line, you remember things really, really, really well. Mm-hmm. Those things go deep into you.
Mm-hmm.
Enough to where they can change your life, and not for the better. I mean, it could cause you to help you to survive, but you ring like a bell for the rest of your life because of the depth of those memories. There's a name for this. This is called PTSD,
mm-hmm.
right? Post-traumatic stress syndrome
mm-hmm.
or disorder. Okay, so these memories turn out to be very important. They your hippocampus gets trimmed down to, you know, fighting trim to where your memory doesn't actually work as well overall. And so your life is less. This is a breakdown. And when you're trying to remember things like the name of your third grade teacher, it's gone. It's literally been cut out of your brain. The ability to retrieve it. Now, the memory itself is still in there. And we know this because of brain surgeons. They could take an electrode and stimulate your brain and boop, suddenly you're back in third grade and there's your teacher sitting across from you, right? There's things that you remember. It's just you can't access it when the switchboard, so to speak, has been altered. Your ability to pull that information, right. You know, via the switchboard. The analogy is that the hippocampus acts like a switchboard. Okay? Interesting, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
So now the question is, how do you fix this thing?
Yeah, what are some of the bridges that can be built?
Well, it turns out that you can lay down new cells in the hippocampus. For a long time, we didn't think that was possible. Once they were trimmed, once they were gone, they were gone. But that was proven not to be true. And what they ended up doing, with research being what it is, they could do PET scans, they could do MRIs, they could do functional MRIs, to be able to see what parts of the brain are being used in various kinds of tasks, and actually to measure the volume of those parts of the brain. And what they found is if you do physical stimulation in space, mm-hmm. that the hippocampus gets bigger. So physical stimulation in space, this means some sort of exercise that has a spatial aspect to it, that you have to engage in space. Can you think of what an exercise would be?
So like in the gym, different areas where the equipment is laid out? Or
yeah, but better than that would be get on a trail and go walking.
Right.
There you go.
That's
especially if you
one.
Go to a place you've never been before.
Yep.
And you're having to look around and remember where you are and how to get back,
mm-hmm.
and now your hippocampus is being stimulated, mm-hmm. and it grows.
I had just that experience last weekend at Kincaid Park in Anchorage and found my way back to the main parking lot, but had no idea where I was going. So
your life was on the line.
Yeah, there's bears in Kincaid Park, so I would say.
Right. And so your brain works better. And it's the stimulation with the physical exercise and the spatial awareness. Now, the bear part would make your hippocampus get trimmed down.
Sure, so
the stress of it. So it turns out that if you look at exercise in general, it's one of the more powerful tools to improve the quality of our brain, how our memory works, how it functions. Another key thing is if we can do so in a social context, that is with other people, and particularly if you do it in the context where there's a rhythm or there's some music that's going on.
So like dancing.
Yeah, that turns out to be the number one thing to build our memory. Literally, to get the hippocampus to get bigger and function better is folk dancing.
Folk dancing. Okay.
There's a simple rhythm, you know, the folk music.
Mm-hmm.
It's simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's not complicated. And there's, you know, lovely people there, and you have to remember the little dance steps, and you're going around the floor, and there it is. It turns out that the research that they looked at, no other thing that they researched ever had as much impact on people's hippocampal volume than the folk dancing. They compared it to lots and lots of different kinds of exercise, lots of different things, and folk dancing came out on top.
I wonder what other dancing variations they tried. Interesting that folk would come to the top of the list.
Yeah, folk dancing was a thing. Yeah, right. Okay, so now let's talk about another thing that's super important about healing our brain.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's common sense. It's sleep.
Yes.
So sleep turns out to be a necessary component of this whole system. I kind of skipped over it the first time. Let me put it in its right place. So our senses give us sensory impressions. Some of those impressions make the cut and they go into short-term memory. Some of the short-term memory makes the cut and goes into long-term memory via the hippocampus. The hippocampus has to be there and functioning for those short-term memories to get converted into long-term memories.
Right.
Now, once the long-term memories get put into our brain, we could see where that is by using these MRIs and functional MRIs and PET scans and various kinds of studies to see what part of the brain lights up. Now, here's where it gets interesting and different, is once we sleep, something happens. The memory is consolidated, and it moves location. When you think of the thing, Jennifer Aniston, whatever, that's the one example they use. When you think of Jennifer Aniston, it was in one part of the brain, but once you go to sleep, it pops up in another part of the brain. There's a Jennifer Aniston part of our brain.
Wow.
Dedicated to Jennifer Aniston.
Is that in our dreams or?
Yeah. The answer is yes. What we think.
Oh.
We're not exactly sure. The idea is, the theory is, and there's some evidence for this, is that it happens during REM sleep.
Right. Okay. That.
So later on in the night. The first part of the night, our sleep is dedicated more towards fixing us physically. Cells come in, they repair things. They you know, they come in and do the cleaning and the remodel. But at nighttime is when the brain cleaning and remodeling takes place. I mean, later in the night. The later part of the night is where it takes place. Now, some of the things we know already are things like where the little channels that allow fluid to flow through the brain between the cells open up. They dilate late at night sleeping, the later part of the night sleeping. And so more fluid flows through the brain and picks up debris. Literally, you know, proteins that are laying around and, you know, toxins that come out of metabolism, those are picked up, cleaned up, and moved on out. The other thing that happens, and we don't understand the mechanism of this, is learning is consolidated, memories are consolidated. There seems to be some sort of...
But they're not associated? They're in separate areas?
They can be associated. They can be associated. They're not necessarily associated. It depends on if there's association between them. But there's some shifting, the moving of the information from one part of the brain to the other. And the other thing that's interesting is we have a pretty good sense of what happens in the brain to cause memory. There's this pattern of neuron firing and dendron laying down. The little branches of the neurons intercombine with one another. So this neuron fires off to that neuron, which fires off to that neuron, which fires off to that neuron, times 10,000, and what you get is a picture. And you get a smell and you get a memory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's not 10,000, it's 10 million or 10 billion, right? Because there's a lot. And it seems to be the whole brain all together. Except it's weird because sometimes one particular neuron out of the billions is associated with a memory. And whenever you think of that thing in whatever context, it fires off. Back to Jennifer Aniston. In a patient, they found a Jennifer Aniston neuron. Anytime the name Jennifer Aniston was mentioned, this one neuron went off. Or you tell a story that Jennifer Aniston comes up on the side of it, mm-hmm. that one neuron shoots off. Or in whatever context you can. You know, who do you know that's named, her initials are J and A, right? That one neuron goes off because Jennifer Aniston's part of that group. So there's evidence that the memories we have, there's certainly more evidence that there are patterns, but there seems to be this particular one neuron being important to a particular memory. And it's, you know, anyways, it's just, they don't want to really understand how it is, but let me get the right point here, is it's not what we think it is. Okay, let me bottom line it. What we think memory is right now is not complete. We don't understand it. There's evidence that some of the information is being stored within individual neurons. It could be the little microtubules that are doing the work. It could be on an atomic level. It's possible. Again, there's evidence that the information is being encoded in very small areas. Let me give you some of the evidence that supports this. Here in Alaska, they have ground squirrels that go into hibernation and they freeze, right? Not they don't freeze solid, but they go real cold. And when they do that, the brain doesn't get enough blood because the blood basically quits flowing. And so what happens is the neurons die. Many of them, they just die. And you'd think with that, all that death, that the ground squirrels would forget stuff. They would lose a goodly portion of their memory. And they're not sure if they do, because they can't ask, do you remember this? But they did things like they would bury acorns.
Sure.
And then they would go through their hibernation, and they would see if the squirrel would dig the acorn up exactly where they buried it. And sure enough, they do. Even though they have severe brain damage. Severe.
Right.
Their axons are being severely cut back. And then they grow back is what they do. And when they grow back, somehow or other, they grow back with the memory. Now, how is that possible? No one knows. Clearly, it's not just the dendrite pattern in the brain. There's got to be more to it than that. See, that's the point I'm making. We don't know how memory actually works. We don't know on what level it is. We don't know even if it's only the brain. It could, in fact, be your little toe is contributing to your memory.
The body does remember things.
Yeah, and so here's what we know for sure. The brain is key. Mm-hmm. We know this from traumatic brain injuries. We know this from illness in brains. We know this from surgery in brains. You cut out pieces of the brain, you lose certain aspects to memory. But even in those cases, there's workarounds. We know this with the examples I gave earlier where people couldn't recall it and yet they remembered it. They could show they remembered it. They demonstrated that they, in fact, had that information in their head, that they learned it and remembered it, even though the memory's broken for whatever reason. It turns out this whole thing is super, super complicated. So in the last few minutes of the show, let me bottom line it. It turns out that the thing that works best to help your memory work well is for you to be healthy.
Hmm.
Yeah, duh, I know.
Surprise.
Y'all knew this was coming,
surprise,
right? In the end, does it boil down to eat right and exercise? You bet it does. Without a doubt. For sure. That is the number one thing you do. So how can you be healthy? Well, you're going to have to sleep. You're going to have to eat food. You're going to have to exercise because it's required, right? And you have to have meaning and purpose in your life. You have to engage in things. You have to be willing to go out there and try new stuff and do things and stimulate your brain. You do all those things, those four basic things, and you got your best chance of actually being healthy and keeping your memory intact. Now, there's a zillion other ways, memory tricks and things that you can do to help it. But if you're really serious about improving your memory, you're going to join a dance class.
Absolutely. Folk dancing. Get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, without a doubt. Okay. Any final questions? Anything else? We got about 1 minute here.
I think I'm going to take home dance lessons and better sleep, better nutrition. Anything else?
Walking.
Oh, there you go.
You go on natural trails. If you go on trails, especially you go to places you haven't been before, it works best if you start at a place you know and then you take a branch that you don't know and you have to look around and you have to have the spatial awareness. We fundamentally are cavemen,
mm-hmm,
and women. We're cave people because we spent a lot of time, our ancestors, there were a lot more cave people than there were Italians, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of ancestors going way back who learned lessons that we retain today. There's things about our bodies that work as if we were cavemen. One of the examples is if you get really cold, there's a little thing in the back of your neck called brown fat that'll kick on and warm you up. This is a caveman thing. When you're out so you don't, you know, freeze to death.
Right.
It kind of goes latent because we don't really use it very often in modern times. But if you jiggle it enough, it'll turn on and you'll start making heat. So there's ways to get it to go on. Our brains are the same way. If we challenge our brains to remember stuff outside, then our memory works better. It wakes up. The hippocampus gets more beefy. It starts functioning better. And pretty soon you start remembering more things naturally because you've been out doing this walking thing and you come back and you feel, you know, energized from it. It's not just energized from it. Your brain's actually being changed by doing the exercise. The other thing we didn't really talk that much about is trauma. We mentioned it, but there's a whole other thing about trauma and how you can actually go through and change memories and actually treat people by altering their memory of the experience, and which is fascinating, and it's a kind of a growing way of treating people with PSTD. But you'll have to come to the talk to get that piece. Haley, thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate you being here. This makes it a lot more interesting to have someone listening, and as I'm explaining these things and you're engaged in this whole thing, I really appreciate it a lot. So I want to let everybody know this has been Health Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Looper, Medical Director of White Spruce Medical, located here downtown Fairbanks, where we treat a wide variety of conditions, mostly gastrointestinal stuff, but memory problems for sure, all kinds of stuff. Anyways, I want everybody to stay safe, stay healthy, and stay in touch. Ooh.